compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, let's get this road show on the road. Patrick Madrid here. Thank you for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. My number is 888-914-9149. You can call now. We have lines open right now. They're usually stacked before the show starts, but we do have some openings. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, have you ever been to like a music festival or anything like that? You know, open air?
Yes, I have.
Have you now?
How funny that you should mention that.
Huh.
I went to Summerfest over the weekend.
What's that?
Summerfest is a giant music festival in Milwaukee. There's okay. all kinds of bands. Dave Chappelle was there, and a bunch of bands that you probably haven't heard of.
Okay.
But I went to go see 311, and I took my family, and it was we were there all day. It was a great experience, but it was interesting because they require proof of vaccination or proof of a negative COVID test. And so
to get into the event.
To get in.
Okay.
Right. And so there's a part where you
And this was yesterday? I'm sorry.
This was Saturday.
Saturday, okay. Yeah. Saturday in the park.
Saturday in the park.
Someone should write a song about that. Go ahead. So what happened?
Well, we're
So you hopped the fence and you got arrested. What happened?
Yeah. Oh, I've already told you this story. I have everyone with me, and the first line of defense to get in is the vaccination proof. And so I'm fumbling with my phone, and the guy was just like, just go on in. Don't worry about it.
Did he at any point look you in the eye? He's holding a cigarette the way the Germans would hold the cigarettes over the palm of their hand and say, your papers are not in order.
Don't worry about the papers.
Yeah, we have ways of making you talk.
So you were fumbling for something
you knew you didn't have. Is that right? You actually didn't have.
Yeah. So that's the trick. If you don't have it, just act like you do and act like.
Oh, it's around here somewhere.
And act like a bumbling idiot, and they'll just let you in anywhere.
Okay, I'm taking notes.
Yeah. So the whole vaccination thing. I guess it's only as strong as the weakest link in the chain of.
So you're the weakest link. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the guy who let me in,
okay,
is the weakest link.
He just said, "To heck with it. I don't need to wait for this guy to fumble."
He just didn't care. Yeah, he's like, yeah. "I don't. Whatever. Just go in. Just go in. You're fine. You're fine." So if they did that with me, and the four other people I was with, how many other people?
You had your papers, you just didn't have them handy.
Right. I just didn't have them on the right screen on my phone, but they still got in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting. You know, I'm not offering any commentary on what's going on. It's an interesting thing that happens.
We have ways of making you talk.
So, yeah, what do you think of that?
Simple. Well, I was thinking about that in light of, so nice coincidence that you went to that on Saturday. It's interesting because it's being announced on Gizmodo that Amazon has a new electronic palm reader. Now, not a palm reader like if you want to know your future, you should stay away from those things. But Amazon's electronic palm reader technology, known as Amazon One, this according to Gizmodo, launched at the Red Rocks Amphitheater in Denver this past Tuesday. And it's the first deployment of this biometric reader outside of an Amazon-owned property. So like if you were to go to a Whole Foods or one of the Amazon stores, and they've moved to the point now where there are no cashiers or anything. You could just simply, in the past, you would do it old school. You would just, I guess, scan your debit card and you'd pay for the stuff, or you could just use your phone. You walk in, it scans your phone, and then it just charges to your account. Well, now with the palm reader, you just simply scan your palm. Once your palm is registered, then you can use it anywhere these are found to get into an event or to purchase an item. And this is obviously something that will make some people uncomfortable, the whole idea of being scanned. But, you know, this biometric technology has been around for a while. So an iris scan, for example. I don't know that I've ever had an iris scan. Have you ever had that? I don't think I've ever had that.
I've seen it in movies, you know, tons of times. Same with the palm reader.
Yeah.
And you know the spy James Bond or whoever it is trying to get into a place, and he shoots the bad guy and then takes the bad guy's dead hand and,
right.
and puts it on the palm reader and opens the door.
Speaking of which, do you remember we did on the show, I don't remember, a year ago maybe, about how with the high-resolution photography that we have now, that you can get somebody's fingerprints from a picture of them if you can see the palm of that person's hands, or even their fingers. You can get the fingerprints from the picture now, and they have proof of concept. It's being done. So when you wave for the camera, you might want to wave vigorously to blur the image of your hand. Man, I don't even know if that would work because they can get fingerprints from that now. Think of all the possibilities.
Wild and crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So Gizmodo says when a ticket holder is ready to enter the amphitheater using their palm, they just can't use regular English anymore. So I'm going to fix it. To use his palm, there is a designated entry where Amazon One is enabled. When a fan hovers his palm over Amazon One's device, a unique palm signature is built by their computer vision technology. Now, I use their in this case because it's referring to Amazon. Amazon One, which launched a year ago in just a handful of Amazon locations, promised to make a big push for third-party applications. And today it seems to be the official start of that initiative, meaning the palm readers will likely start showing up at all kinds of locations. Amazon promises the technology is secure and it doesn't store any information locally. And I don't know, is that good or bad? Because that means that it's stored at the mothership, along with all the other information that they know about you. Amazon says the service is designed to be highly secure and uses custom-built algorithms and hardware to create, Cyrus, your unique palm signature. Once enrolled, the service is contactless and ticket holders can use their palms to enter AXS ticketed venues, and that stands, the AXS is the acronym for the device. They can enter these venues in less than a second or two. We're excited to see how AXS fans like using Amazon One to get into their favorite events. Amazon hasn't released exact figures for how many people have signed up for Amazon One, but it says that it's in the tens of thousands of people throughout 60 locations around the country. Amazon has partnered with AXS, which handles ticketing for a high number of concerts and sports venues in the U.S., including the Staples Center in Los Angeles and the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, among a host of others. So it concludes, whether you like it or not, and privacy advocates are skeptical to say the least, you are probably going to be seeing a lot of these devices in a lot of new locations very soon. Welcome to the biometric future, Cyrus.
Wow. Yeah, we're living in a science fiction show right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy. These will be everywhere. And that'll eliminate, like, the guy who, you know, just let me in because he didn't want to wait for me to find my documents.
Well, he won't even have a job next time.
He won't have a job, and we'll just all wave our hands or scan our eyeballs.
And maybe he can get to work at the Jimmy John's that's closed on weekends because there's no one to work.
Maybe.
I have a story about that. I want to share this with you. Then we're going to take phone calls. 888-914-9149. I travel. I go around the country and I do events at parishes and things of that nature. So I have to take my street clothes to the laundry from time to time to get them ready to go. So I go to the dry cleaner where I typically take my stuff, and I'm waiting to talk to the girl at the counter. And I look at the sign, and there's this big sign next to the counter that says, now open only Mondays and Thursdays. And I said, what does that mean? Is it like different hours on Mondays and Thursdays? She said, no, we're only open now on Mondays and Thursdays. It used to be a six-day-a-week operation, and they'd be open till 7 p.m. And I said, why are you only open on Mondays and Thursdays? And I knew the answer. She said, because we can't get anyone to work. She said, I'm a nurse. I'm a full-time nurse. She was wearing a wedding ring, so I assume she's a wife and mother to boot. And she said, I'm a full-time nurse, and I'm just picking up some extra hours for mad money because the owner of the dry cleaner is my friend, and she can't get anyone to work. There's nobody who's willing to work. So we had to shut this thing down except for 2 days a week. So I go over to, the main branch because she said, we can't even, if you drop your stuff off, we won't have it for you in time. You can take it to the main one. So I go across town, I go to the main one, and I'm talking to the owner, and she tells me the same story, but in greater detail. She just tells me how it's like pulling teeth to get anyone to do any kind of work. They've raised the pay. Walmart and Amazon and all these other companies, they're giving like free college tuition for people who want to work, and they can't get people to work. So it's not just Jimmy John's. It's everywhere. It's astonishing to me how many people. I told you about our visit to P.F. Chang's on Sunday, right? To get a lettuce wrap, Nancy and I?
I don't remember.
Oh, my gosh. Go back and look at the show notes from yesterday. I told you this story yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, and we were talking to the the hostess, and she said the same thing.
Because that's right. Yeah, now I remember.
Yep. Yeah. Well, have some more coffee, Cyrus.
And you have to finish the story for the folks that didn't hear yesterday.
Well, it's real brief, but it just feeds into this narrative that I find fascinating and ominous, actually. So we went to the P.F. Chang's, which is a big, bustling restaurant. I love their food, and we've been going to these for 25-plus years. And it's a big restaurant, and I reckon it could probably accommodate 150, 200 people when it's maxed out. And it's mostly empty. I mean, there are a few people in there, but most of the tables, I would say 80% of the tables are empty. And the hostess said, well, it'll be a, you know, half hour wait, 20-minute wait. And I said, why? I mean, there's nobody in there. She said, well, it's not that. It's just that we can't open up to full capacity because we only have 3 waiters who have shown up to work. And we just don't have enough people to serve the hungry public like the Madrids. So we waited and we got our table and we talked to her a little bit more and talked to the waiter. And the upshot of the whole thing is they just cannot get anyone
to
work.
That is crazy. You know, I've been keeping that in mind the last few weeks. And so when we do go out to eat.
You're going to get free college tuition?
No, just, you know, we tip even more generously than normal.
That's good.
Because these people they're working extra hard because they're so short-staffed. And they're actually coming into work. And I'm just like, thank you for being here.
Right. Right. Because the next time it'll either be closed or there will be a robot taking your order. I think that'd be kind of fun to give an order to a robot. I wouldn't want to take orders from a robot. I mean, imagine if you went to work and your boss has been replaced by a robot. So now you're a direct report to a robot.
No thanks. Yeah. How 9,
if it ever happens, please film it because I'd love to see that.
I've seen that movie. No thanks.
I'm sorry, Cyrus. I can't let you do that.
I'm sorry, Patrick. You cannot take any time off.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, it's the future is here, and I'm not sure I like it. 888-914-9149. Let's get to some phone calls. Anthony in Los Lunas, New Mexico. Thank you for calling in and welcome.
Good morning. I'm looking for a book recommendation for a young man that my daughter has just become engaged to. Mm-hmm. He comes from a family that has absolutely no religious affiliation. He's not anti-religion. He's not pro-religion. But he's been asking me a lot of questions about Christianity and Catholicism. And I'm just hoping to be able to find a book to fill in the blanks for him.
Well, that's good of you to do that. There are many such books. A classic in the genre is known as Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. Now, C.S. Lewis was a Church of England guy, so he didn't espouse the Catholic faith the way I would. But he did a good job of giving sort of the big picture look at Christianity as such. So because it's a classic in the work, that would be one that you would want to take a look at. I wrote a book, for what it's worth. It's called Why Be Catholic? 10 answers to a very important question. And my goal there was to take a 50,000-foot view of, you know, why should you be Catholic? Why should you consider the Catholic Church, especially in recent times with the scandals and things? So I wrote that book, Why Be Catholic, for skeptics, people who are predisposed to not really think the Catholic Church would be an option. So that's one. Scott Hahn wrote a very good book. It's called Rome, Sweet Home, and that details his conversion from evangelical Protestantism to being a Catholic. Now, since this young man doesn't have any faith background, that may or may not, in all the books that I just mentioned, may or may not meet him where he's at. One other book that I'm associated with is called Surprised by Life, and that's the fourth in the series of the Surprised by Truth books. That book is interesting because it's got 10 converts. Each one tells his or her story. These are people who largely were either of no faith at all, before they became Catholic, or they were only maybe marginally Christian, but their route to Jesus and their route to the Catholic Church is not through Bible verses and the facts of Christian history. In the book Surprised by Life, their stories are all going through the wreckage of sexual promiscuity and broken marriages and abortion and life issues in the strict sense. And one by one, they all found their way to faith in Christ. So it's another way of looking at that path to conversion. And maybe that would be good for him, because it's not focused on things that he wouldn't know about, you know, not having been raised as anything. So that particular book, again, Anthony, is called Surprised by Life. I edited it, for full disclosure, but it's the stories that really are very powerful.
Excellent. And the first one you mentioned by C.S. Lewis, the title is what?
Mere Christianity.
Near, N-E-A-R?
Yeah. Mere, M-E-R-E. Okay. Not near, mere, M-E-R-E. Mere Christianity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that book, just by way of background, as I understand it, it really it took shape in the form of a series of radio addresses that C.S. Lewis gave. And so in his radio messages, it was so well received that the script that he wrote for these radio, I forget now if they were interviews or just talks he would give on the radio. He was an Oxford Don. He died the same day as President John F. Kennedy did. November 22nd, 1963. Aldous Huxley died that day too. But in any case, he turned that into a book because it was so warmly received that he thought, you know, there's maybe a book in here. And it turned into an instant classic. I hope that's helpful, and I do appreciate the call. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Stephen in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is I'm 58 years old, and I'm a Catholic. I went to the Catholic school all my life, and for the past 5 or 6 years, I have not gone to Mass at all. And the reason is, sir, the church here in Rio Rancho, they talk down to me and talk down to all the parishioners, and I really got upset because they don't even look at you. They just lecture you. And I was like, I said to my wife, I said, I can't do this anymore. And I was, a question for you is, should I look for another church, sir? Because I feel very guilty of not going to Mass or confession, things of that nature, sir.
Yes, you should look for another parish. If you find the parish that you're at intolerable for whatever reason, go find another parish. But remember something, and I offer to you this, I offer this to you for your consideration. You're going to church to learn, to listen, to worship God, to, you know, to be catechized to some extent. So that's part of the job of the parish priest. If he is doing those things, then he's doing his job. So I wouldn't take offense at that. And hopefully whoever the priest is, you know, is simply doing what he's supposed to be doing and not doing it in a condescending way. But the mere fact that he is trying to teach in the sermon and explain things, perhaps, those are good things. And we all need to be teachable. We all need to be receptive to those things. You see what I mean?
I understand, but mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But the thing I don't like is he basically, instead of talking to us as human beings and as adults, he talks to us as if we're children, and he tries to lecture us. And I really don't like being lectured. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I respect mm-hmm. that. But there's other ways to do it, if you understand what I'm trying to say, sir.
I think I do. I think I do. just keep in mind, and I'm not negating the point you're making, but do remember that Jesus himself said that unless you become as little children, then you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. So there's a kind of humility that
yes,
is
sir.
That Jesus wants of us. So I just, you know, again, food for thought.
Well, thank you so much, and have a great day, and God bless you and your family.
Thank you. I hope you do get back to Mass soon. I hope you get back to the sacraments. That's the life of grace
that's
that we all need. Yeah.
Yes, sir. God bless.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you. All righty. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to get my glasses and my shoes, and I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
Okay. This is interesting. What is this, Cyrus?
I don't even remember making this.
Sounds like surf rock.
I just found a folder of a bunch of old rejoins I don't know if I've ever even played. So, here you go.
Sounds not unlike a garage band I played for long ago. Let's go to Brian in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Good morning, Brian. Hello, Brian. Brian, party of one. Bueller? Brian, we're coming to you now.
What's the handle?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on my lawnmower. God bless you, Patrick.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make an observation that if someone wanted to destabilize an economy, they could go after the means of production, that including labor and materials. And so I'm not a big conspiracy buff, but I just wonder sometimes if it's a coincidence that there was this shortage in lumber and this shortage in microchips that affected the auto industry. And if you Google what is there a shortage of, usually you get a list of about a dozen different things.
At least a dozen.
Yeah. My wife and I went into a bicycle shop. I believe it was a Trek bicycle shop, Trek bikes. They had three bicycles in the shop. Mm-hmm. And I asked the man working there. He said, well, for one thing, the coronavirus epidemic created a demand for bicycles, but there was a shortage of components to build the bicycles. You know, that's just a little example, but
right.
Just think of the waves that it creates with employment and the prices that go up, you know, can create inflation.
Yes.
It's just kind of curious.
No, there is a. You're right. I believe there is a cause and effect, obviously a cause and effect correlation here. To your point, the question is, was it intentional? Was this done intentionally? And if so, by whom? And why would they do this, whoever they are? I was talking about this on Sunday with my wife, Brian, and I raised this point to her. I said, you know, we were considering all the shops and businesses that are really hurting for employment. They can't get people to work, et cetera, et cetera. And we talked a little bit about the price of meat going up and all the prices of things. We live in a land where everything is so plentiful and so easily obtainable, and it's so unlike what we've become accustomed to here, and that is to have everything at our fingertips whenever we want it. And now, like when you can't buy a chlorine tablet for your pool, Why can't I buy a chlorine tablet for my pool? So these are all questions. So in my conversation with her, I said, I wonder if part of the strategy behind the stimulus money, which I have said before that I am in favor of you getting back some of your tax money, belongs to you in any case. So if you can get some of that back, that's great. But the problem I see is that we're now seeing people across the board who would prefer to stay at home and play Xbox rather than go to work because it's more lucrative for them to stay at home, or at least it's not less lucrative for them to stay at home and get stimulus checks, even though they are maybe relatively small for many people. That's sufficient, that in unemployment, so they can stay afloat indefinitely. So then I thought, well, why would somebody do that? Why would a government do that? Why would you idle the workforce if in fact that's what this is intended to do? And the only reason I can think of would be because if you want people to become fat and happy and complacent and gullible and dull and willing to go with the flow because you don't want to shut off the money supply, that's how you do it. And people who are out there hustling, who are working hard, they get up early, you know, they have to sacrifice to work. And work is not always fun. Maybe often it's not fun at all, but they do it because if they don't, they can't make their rent. or they can't buy groceries or make their car payment, etc. So just thinking about human nature, I'll toss it back to you. Just thinking about human nature, I'm thinking, if you can get enough people on the dole, so to speak, who then become dull and lazy and pliant and easily led, that's the kind of person you want if you're running a government, whether it's this administration or any administration. That's the kind of person you want if you want to get people to do what you want them to do or not do things that you don't want them to do. Those are the kind of people you want. You don't really want people who are used to struggling, who are used to hardship, who are willing to get out and work and break a sweat because they have to, because that kind of a life breeds a mentality of, I've got to figure out what's the right thing to do here. I've got to figure out the best thing. I've got to search for answers. And, you know, if you have a government that really wants to lead people around by the nose, that's not the kind of person you really want. You want more of the former category, not of the latter category. So that was my wise pontification that I shared with Nancy, and I share it with you now. What do you think about that?
Well, Patrick, you remind me of a Pixar cartoon about a little robot where life on Earth is uninhabitable. And up in space, there's these giant ships where all the people live. And they're all fat, and they all ride around in these chairs that just sort of gravitate. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're all eating fast food and you know, enjoying pleasure. I heard earlier on, I think it was the morning show, and they sort of addressed this, that we're designed for work, and
that's true.
When we don't work, it's bad for us physically because we can become out of shape. When we don't work, it's bad for us mentally because actually there's links to depression. It's bad for us spiritually because that is who we are. We're denying who we are. You know,
right. And, you know, when God made Adam, the first thing he did was gave him a job, name the animals, Adam. So he put Adam to work. And that was part of his being fulfilled as a human being, was to actually work. And that was before the fall.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're starting to make me feel like a conspiracy theorist, because sometimes I wonder if there's an international government. This may be coming from an international government because they don't want they don't want a strong power amidst all the, you know, the weaker states. Mm-hmm. They would want this sort of, I guess it's kind of a socialist thing. Everyone has the same thing.
Yeah, the Soviet Union is a great example of enforced conformity and the dull grayness of life in the Soviet Union. I never visited the Soviet Union, so I don't know from firsthand experience, but everything I could see suggested that it was conformity was pounded into people. And the last thing the Soviet commissars wanted was people who thought and acted independently, because that was a threat to their system. Well, Brian, I don't think you're a conspiracy theorist. I think if nothing else, you're just simply seeing the signs of the times and you're putting two and two together. Nothing wrong with that. Thanks for the call. Let's go to John now in New York City. Hi, John.
Hi, Patrick. I almost called you John. I have a question about dating. I'm well into my adult years, and I have started dating a woman who is not Catholic, who is interested in Christianity but is not Catholic. And I was looking at materials for, like, basically how far is too far, that kind of thing. And I wanted to get a recommendation of something maybe I could show her to read.
About Christianity as such? Is that what you mean?
About in terms of dating and without getting blue.
I see.
About, yes. We're trying to help her to understand where I'm coming from. And I've spoken to a priest, and I feel like I've explained myself well, or at least explained, not myself, but explained that part of the faith well. But just something to put it in perspective.
Sure. Well, two books come to mind. One I recommend often. It's by Steve Wood. His website is dads.org. And the book is called The ABCs of Finding a Good Wife. And he also wrote one for the ladies called The ABCs of Finding a Good Husband. So if you were to give her the ABCs of finding a good husband, he would be speaking to her, assuming that she already knew that she was maybe even Catholic. That's the assumption that the book is built upon. But she could still read it if she's not a Catholic or even a Christian of any type, so that she could understand, like you said, where you're coming from. And as long as you're going to get that for her, you might as well get the one for you, The ABCs of Finding a Good Wife. And then the other book that comes to mind is by the late, great Archbishop Fulton Sheen. I know you have heard of him. And it's called Three to Get Married. And it is a very readable, accessible, very popular book. And it's essentially a sort of, it's an everyman's theology of the sacrament of holy matrimony. What is it? What does it mean? What preparation do you need for it? What should you expect? How do you live for better or for worse, and richer, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, till death do us part? How do you actually do that? So Archbishop Sheen was a master storyteller. He was a master communicator. And in that book, he just lays out, really from A to Z, all the important things that you should know before you get married. I think that would be another good book.
Thank you. One more question. He is Muslim. When I spoke to a priest, he said, you know, she doesn't, this did not sound right to me. He said, technically she doesn't have to convert to marry you. And I said, I accepted it, but I moved on. She wants to, it seems like. She's very attracted to Christianity now, I think through exposure to me and my family. Mm-hmm. And I want to encourage that. But is what he told me correct?
No. Sometimes I'm astonished by the things that people say that they're told by priests. You would need a dispensation to marry her. So that's one thing, you know, you would need permission from the bishop to, because it's a disparity of cult is the term for it that the canon lawyers use. You could do it, but if that's what the priest meant, I mean, if he meant, you know, she wouldn't need to convert for you to marry her, then that's technically true. So perhaps that's what he meant. I don't want to fault him unnecessarily.
I understand. But I tend to think that that's where he was going. So,
okay, then I withdraw my criticism, because I don't want to be critical. Yeah,
right,
so I would
right.
just say in that case, he was referring to that. However, obviously, conversion is far better than having a mixed marriage. Even if you really love her, it creates a built-in tension, and you're not, as the Bible says, equally yoked. You're unequally yoked in this case. So it's the same advice I've given to all my kids as they've grown older and started looking for someone to marry, and that is, not because we look down on anybody or feel that we're better than anybody, but find a good Catholic man or woman to marry, because then you've eliminated a potentially huge problem with being mismatched or being not on the same page. The most important thing in life, if you don't share it with the person that you're spending the rest of your life with, it can make things very difficult. So that would be my advice in any case. But I would evangelize her, and you might want to get her a book by Peter Kraft. It's called The Philosophy of Jesus, in which he lays out, you know, who is Jesus? What did he say? What did he do? It's a very good book, and I've given it to non-Catholics before with good effect. So you might want to check that one out. Another thing I'd like to do is reference a Coptic priest. His name is Father Zachariah Boutros. And, excuse me, his website is Father, it's all spelled out, Father Zachariah, Zakaria.net. He is an expert on Islam. And not only is he an expert, he also is fluent in Arabic, because I believe he's from Egypt. And he has done an immense amount of work, a lot of it on video, in which he highlights and showcases the distinctions between Islam and the Catholic Church. He calls Muslims to conversion. From what I've heard anecdotally, his program is widely watched throughout the Muslim world. Why they allow that to happen, I don't know, but apparently he's very well known in the Muslim world. He's fearless, he's very direct, and he tells the truth. So that might be another resource that you could share with her. It's all free, the things that he has on his website. And
I think
that's what I would
do
suggest.
A combination of it. Yeah, I think I will do a combination of it. She's not from the Middle East. She is Albanian, and she is very nominally, if I'm using the word correctly, nominally Muslim. She is more of a cultural kind of Muslim. and it's not at all like many cultural Catholics, people who are raised Catholic, but could not list the Ten Commandments if you ask them to, and of that nature. So I think in exposure, I think, you know, she, when I go to confession, she comes with me and she stays in the church and she prays. So I think that she has some affinity to this, and I want to foster it. I don't want to leave that. I'm not interested in, I would like to, if I'm going to marry her, I would want her to convert. Her own sake, actually, even if I, you know, didn't marry her, I want her to convert. So, but that's where I'm shooting from. But thank you so much.
You're welcome, John. Good to talk to you. I hope that some of those resources are helpful to you and to her especially. Thank you. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Now that's what I call a taco.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Oh, my. That last voice you hear on that SNL skit is Jason Sudeikis. Sudeikis? I forget how he pronounces it. Very funny guy. And he has a new TV show. Well, I guess it's been out for a year or two. It's called Ted Lasso. And I posted this on Twitter. I'll just mention it in passing before we get back to the phones. Ted Lasso. And the premise of the story is he's an American football coach. I think he coaches college football. And he gets hired to, well, ostensibly to win games for a British soccer team. And in fact, as it says in the first episode, he's really hired by the owner, the former owner's former wife, to basically destroy the team. That's why she hires him, because nobody can figure out why did this guy get hired, because he doesn't know anything about soccer and he's kind of like a hayseed, etc. So Nancy and I thought, well, you know, we've heard some good things about this. We'll put it on and see. So we put it on, and you know, it is funny. We put the first episode on. That's as far as we got, and we stopped more or less in the middle. I think it was in the middle because there was, you know, the obligatory bad words here and there. It's like you grit your teeth and, I can deal with this, I guess. I don't like it. But in the middle or thereabouts of the first episode, there is this horrendous, and I mean horrendous, blasphemy, not just against God, but against the Holy Family, against Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, Jesus being God, of course. And that was it. So Nancy and I looked at each other in horror, and we just turned it off. It's like, that's it. We're done. And it doesn't matter how funny it is or whatever may happen down the road. We're done. We're out. We're not going back, because it was just so beyond the pale and so unnecessary. And I put that on Twitter, and a lot of people, maybe you're one of them, a lot of people thanked me. It's like, oh, gosh, thank you for letting us know. Now we won't bother watching it. And one or two people were sort of trying to grind on me. I forget exactly how they put it. One person's, you know, well, you know, if you don't like it, then that's fine, but you don't have to go around bad-mouthing it or some such thing. And I thought, no, I want to tell people about that so that they don't wind up being scandalized by this blasphemy. And I mean, this is a really over-the-top, horrendous blasphemy that I can't repeat to you. So comes a time, and that's why I'm saying this, because Jason Sudeikis, I like his work. I think he's very funny, and I wanted to like this. I was prepared to like this, but it just shut the door, slammed it, the door in my face, and I'm not going back through that door. So I'm mentioning it to you in the event that maybe you haven't seen Ted Lasso. If you haven't seen Ted Lasso, if you feel like I do, I wouldn't bother with it. And the thing that puzzles me, quite frankly, are the reactions from people, including Catholics, who say, "I saw it. I thought it was funny. I didn't notice any blasphemy. I didn't notice it. Where was that? I mean, how could you not notice that? How could you sit there and watch it and not know what was just said? Because it wasn't said quietly, and it certainly wasn't said, you know, in obscurity. It was a one-liner, and it was loud and clear, and it was intended for laughs, and it was really terrible. So, word of the wise, if you haven't seen it, I wouldn't bother for that reason. And if you have seen it, and that doesn't bother you, then I would do an examination of conscience, if you don't mind me making that humble suggestion. Ask yourself, have I become so desensitized to profanity and to blasphemy that something as extreme as that just went right by me and I didn't even blink? What does that say about me? Anyway, that's my public service announcement for you this morning. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Lee in Northwest Arkansas. Hi, Lee.
Hi. Hang on a second. Let me... There we go. I had you on Bluetooth because I'm one of these people who have a job. Anyway, something that goes to the subject I wanted to say. By the way, happy Taco Tuesday.
Thank you.
Something I've noticed here in Northwest Arkansas is that ever since the pandemic and all the government assistance and stuff has been going on, it seems like on just about every street corner, every off-ramp, everywhere in here in this area, there seems to be people standing around holding signs, you know, please help, please give, you know, yeah, homeless, destitute, and all this other stuff, you know, everything from, you know, homeless to veteran to all this other things. And I mean, it's just exploded. And I don't know if have you noticed this anyplace else in the country? Because, you know, the ironic thing is like my wife and I, and you know, she's got a big heart, and she always wants to help and everything. And I always remind her, you know, Jesus is to have the wisdom of a snake whenever it comes to charity. And, you know, the ironic thing is you can see a person standing there on a street corner holding one of these signs, and then in the background you can see three help wanted signs from businesses.
Yeah. Yeah, that is an anomaly, especially in places where you've got a lot of people, a lot of employers looking for workers, and then you've got people begging who could work if they wanted to. I'm sorry, Lee, what was that?
I just said, I was agreeing. I just said, yes, exactly.
Right, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. In other words, if you're able-bodied enough to stand here and panhandle, you're able-bodied enough to flip a burger or to box groceries or something like that. So to your question, no, I don't think I'm the right person to ask, because I don't have an opportunity to see that on a regular basis. So if I see people panhandling or in some other way they're looking for help on the streets, it would be fairly infrequent. I do know that in sections of Phoenix, for example, a city that I'm in quite often, there are certain areas where you can go intersection after intersection after intersection, and there's somebody on every corner panhandling. And I remember having a conversation about this with a priest friend of mine as we were driving through, and he said, this is actually just a business. And these people come out, they have a shift, and when their shift is over, they leave and somebody else takes their place. And somebody, whoever is behind all this, is the one that's collecting the lion's share of the money. These are the worker bees, and they stand out there and they collect, because they look, you know, bedraggled and scraggly, and people have natural compassion for them, not realizing that that's just their job. That's what they get paid to do. And then they go home and play Xbox.
Yeah, and it's like one of the things I pointed out to my wife. I said, you know, a lot of these people are standing there smoking a cigarette, too. What are cigarettes now, $7 a pack?
I wouldn't know.
Just saying.
And they have cell phones, you know, so there's a data plan. Now, don't get me wrongly, I am not the least bit callous or cold toward people who genuinely need help. We should do everything we can to help them. It's sorting them out that can be difficult, and trying to figure out who is just scamming me and who actually really needs help. And I know there are two primary schools of thought. One is, well, because if you give this guy $5, he might go to the liquor store and buy a bottle of Ripple. I don't know how much Ripple costs, but, you know, he might drink that money or use it for drugs or something. That's a possibility. Therefore, some people say don't give anything to anybody because they might abuse that money. And then the other school of thought is, you know, be promiscuous in your giving and give to everybody who asks of you and let God sort it out. And I tend toward the latter point of view myself, but there are times, I'll give you an example, and I got to run, Lee. I was with Nancy, and we were going into, you know, one of these big kind of like, not a farmer's market per se, but it's a big place where you've got lots of shops that are in stalls. And not that that matters, but anyway, so there's this guy out front, and he accosts me verbally, not in a bad way, and, you know, hey, sir, can you help me out? I'm, you know, I think he was preaching the gospel on the street corner. So as he gets up close to me, and I'm listening to him, and we're talking and all that, he reeks of beer. It's very strong. And so when he gets around to making the ask, and I said, no, I'm not going to give you any money. He says, why not? I'm a, you know, fellow Christian, a man of God, etc. I said, yeah, I know, but you're just going to go buy beer with us. And he acted shocked. Oh, gosh, no, I would never do that. I said, well, then why do you reek of beer? Then he's sort of like backpedaling or whatever. So the way it went down, Lee, and maybe I was a chump for doing this, but I was talking to him for probably 3-4 minutes. And he said, no, I really do need the help. I really need the help. I'm living in a homeless shelter and I need help. And I said, I'll tell you what, I will give it to you, but I would ask you to promise me, and more importantly, promise God, that you're not going to go take this and drink it away or buy cigarettes or something else. Do you promise me that? And he said, yes, I promise you. Now, I bet in retrospect, he probably didn't mean it. And he probably did go buy a beer with that. But I wanted to use that moment. Maybe it was an opportunity for him to kind of think about his own actions. And who knows? Maybe there was a turning point there. I don't know. So anyway, Lee, thank you. We should be generous to people who need it, that's for sure. But trying to figure out who they are, that can be difficult. 888-914-9149. How about Edgar in Atlanta? Hi, Edgar.
Hey, Patrick. I'm really enjoying the conversation this morning. Just wanted to chime in on the worker shortage. Yeah, you're welcome. We're having the same issue in Atlanta where I live. And, you know, one thing my wife and I were talking about is that it's a lot harder to get in the country now. You know, most of the undocumented workers that we've had around, you know, all our lives, have been a visa overstays. Well, it's much harder to get a visa now. The border's a lot more shut down. So I really think that a lot of this worker shortage, a lot of this, the benefits that are available, I think a lot of it is we just have a lot less workers out there. It's just 2 years of undocumented workers, it's a lot harder for them to get in the country. So it's
interesting
a ripple
theory
there, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, interesting theory, and it may well be true in some parts of the country. So where I live in Columbus, Ohio, the number of Hispanics is rather low, certainly by comparison to much of the rest of the country. There is a population here, but it's not very much. So, you know, the typical American demographic is what you would see in Columbus, Ohio. You'd see a lot of white people, a fair number of black people. Asian and Hispanic, not that many. I mean, if you go in certain areas, you can find more people in those populations. But by and large, it's typically the standard demographic in the United States that you would find. And so those people, at least where I live, are not coming up from the border. They're not overstaying their visas. They're just American citizens who don't want to work because they're making more money by staying at home. So I grant your theory, and it may well be true in California and Arizona and perhaps where you are in Atlanta, but I don't know how to account for it with that answer in other places where you don't really have a high Hispanic population. You know what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying there. I think it's probably a combination of both, at least around here. I mean, another thing with the undocumented population is they're not eligible for any benefits. So they have to work if they're going to feed their families, right? So, you know.
Not in places like California. There are a lot of places where there's a cornucopia of benefits that are available to people who are undocumented. That may vary by state, but I mean, I'm from California, so I know that there it's especially robust in terms of services and things available to people in that category. So I don't know what it's like in Georgia, though. I'm not trying to shoot you down. don't misunderstand.
I understand, Patrick. Yeah, I get it. I think that in Georgia, it's not as generous, I'm certain, than in California. But I know that, you know, you can access those benefits with state papers, for instance, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And things are changing, you know, almost by the hour. So I don't even know anymore what the circumstances are in California. But it's definitely moving more in the direction of providing more things for illegal immigrants, undocumented workers, whatever terminology people prefer. It's certainly not going in the opposite direction. It's making it more plentiful. So it is what it is. Hey, I've got to take a break, Edgar, but I do appreciate your phone call. Thank you. We're going to step aside for just a minute and come back with more of your phone calls. I've got some stories I want to share with you. Are you familiar with the Jewish ritual in some circles of swinging a live chicken over your head? You may be saying, what? Yeah, that's a ritual. And if you live in the vicinity of an ultra-Orthodox or Orthodox Jewish community, you may have seen that happen. I'll explain to you what that is and why some people are up in arms about that when we return for hour two of the Patrick Madrid Show.